Well, thank you, and good morning to everybody. Thanks for being on the call. Certainly appreciate the opportunity to interact and take whatever questions you have. I'm looking forward to coming out to speak to the folks at the America's Future Fund in Dubuque on Thursday, and I want to thank them for their invitation, the opportunity to go out and listen to what the good folks in Iowa who have a great and disproportionate impact on the future of our country because of the unique position they have in the Iowa caucuses. And it'd be good to go out and listen to them, hear what their concerns are, which I'm going to try to do, and take their questions. And then, you know, as the speech indicates, go out and talk about some of the things that I think are, you know, missing with the Republican Party and in its formulation of its message. Talk about the importance of listening to people and to try to and understanding the exceptional value of Americans, ordinary Americans, to be able to solve their problems, and that the government's role is in fact to try to help those people solve the problems best at home and in the community, as opposed to centralizing things in Washington. And that's the somewhat the general theme of my talk. And I'm not here to lecture. I'm here to listen and take questions. So I'll turn it back over to whoever it is who's going to be moderating, and I'll take whatever questions you have.
Okay. The floor is now open for questions. If you have a question, please press the number 7 or letter Q on your telephone keypad. Again, that's the number 7 or letter Q on your telephone keypad.
You are in the queue to ask a question.
From Rob Dillard. Rob, please state your question.
So, Senator, what does this mean about your plans for 2012, this trip to Iowa?
I'm coming out because I was asked by the folks at the American Future Fund to give a talk in Iowa several months ago, as a matter of fact, and I thought it was a great opportunity. You know, I've been to Iowa a few times, a couple of times for the caucuses, and I was always impressed in the knowledge of people out there and the interest that they have in the political system here. It's having been to both Iowa and New Hampshire, campaigning for previous presidential candidates during primaries and caucuses, you know, I always marvel at those states as they take their responsibility seriously that they have in the primary season. So I also knew that going out there would be an opportunity to speak into the moment. When you give a speech in either Iowa, New Hampshire, as a Republican or a Democrat, people are going to pay attention, and I think this is an important time in our country's future, and we need to have voices out there trying to direct the opposition. I mean, we're the opposition party, and we're not doing an effective job, in my mind, of articulating why we're opposing, and just as importantly, articulating solutions to the problems that confront America. And this is an opportunity for me to do that.
Okay, the next question comes from Lynn Campbell. Lynn, please state your question.
Hi, Senator.
Hi.
I guess my question is similar to Rob's, but can you just tell us directly, are you planning on running for president in 2012?
Yeah, you know, it's 3 years away, and what I think I've said pretty consistently is that this is an opportunity for me to talk about issues that are important, to speak into the moment. I have no plans, and just the opposite. It's not that I'm not going to plan. It's just that this is an opportunity to speak, and lend my voice to the what I hope to be a conservative movement and a Republican movement to change the direction that Barack Obama wants to take us. And as far as 2012, I mean, I'm worried about 2009 and what's going to be accomplished here in the next few months. We've got elections in 2009 for, you know, governor, which I've been involved in. I've been up in New Jersey campaigning. I've been doing some stuff here in Virginia. And at the same time, you know, we've got 2010. So it's just way too early to do any speculation. And that's the best I can do right now, is that I'm going to be out there speaking on a national level, because I think I have something to add to the equation. And I think that the voices of people who have been speaking loudly across this country have not been effectively communicated, and hopefully I can tap into that and help them get their message across to leaders here in Washington who don't seem to be paying a lot of attention to them.
And what message exactly do you feel that's not being effectively communicated? Do you feel like, are you talking about with the healthcare debate, or?
Yeah, I think healthcare. I mean, if you look at what Barack Obama is trying to do, and Republicans, I think, have by and large not been particularly effective in articulating the vision of a healthcare system that entrusts ultimately entrust the control of the system to individuals as opposed to and doctors and as opposed to government. And, you know, as someone who's been involved in this issue way back in 1992 when I introduced the first medical savings accounts bill way back when with John Kasich. And I know there's some Pennsylvania reporters on the call, they remember 1994. I mean, I had a health care plan, and that, you know, I debated Harris Wofford when Clinton Care was big. And so this is an area that I feel like I have some area of expertise and have laid out very clear plans and articulated a vision that I'm hopeful that other Republicans will adopt and begin to put forth.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next question comes from Kay Henderson. Kay, please state your question.
Senator, you use this phrase, speak into the moment.
Yeah.
I'm interested in the platform from which you're speaking. Sarah Palin quite famously resigned her as governor in order to, in her words, influence the debate.
Yeah.
How, as someone who does not hold office and lost their last election, talk about the platform from which you speak and how you might base a campaign being someone who hasn't held office for years and years.
Well, I mean, I think you, in some respects, make my point. You know, I don't have office, and therefore the ability for me to, as I hate to use the term over and over, but you use it, speak into the moment, and to have an opportunity to influence the debate, you know, has to come from other places. It can't come from, you know, doing press conferences, you know, outside my Senate office. And so I have done, you know, I know Tom Fitzgerald's on from the Philadelphia Inquirer. I mean, I write a column for the Philadelphia Inquirer. I do Bill Bennett's Morning in America show every Friday morning for 3 hours. I give speeches around the country on a variety of different things. I was in Illinois last week. I'm going to be in Arizona next week. I'm going to be in California next week. I'm going to be in North Carolina in a couple of weeks. I mean, so I am traveling around trying to help candidates, and it's a combination of helping candidates and speaking to groups that would like to hear you know, a different set of ideas than those that are being espoused in Washington D.C. by the administration. So you have to take when you're in a position like mine, you have to take the opportunity that the America Futures Fund has afforded me, the opportunity to go out and have a platform where, you know, several reporters are going to write what I say, and people are going to have an opportunity to hear my point of view. So, in a sense, you've answered your own question, that the fact that I don't have position in office means that I have to use alternative ways to communicate.
So, just to boil it down even further, you think as a potential presidential candidate, you have a better shot as a talker rather than a doer?
Well, I think the beauty that I bring to the table is that I have 16 years of doing. I have 16 years of a record that I would put up against any other person over that 16-year period of accomplishments. You know, everything from foreign policy and the work that I did and to stuff that I did on international poverty, stuff that here I did on domestic poverty, things that I did on economics, on health care, and I mean, on taxes, on social issues. I mean, if you want to look at over the last 16 years of someone who's actually stood up, not just on policy, but also, you know, my time in the House, the guys from Pennsylvania remember, and well, you from Iowa remember, Jim Nussle and I stood up and as the Gang of Seven and fought corruption in the House of Representatives. So I think, you know, I've got a pretty good record of tapping into the concerns of the American public, articulating those in Washington, D.C., whether they're corruption or whether they're policy differences, and effectively, you know, following through and passing legislation or exposing corruption that has made a difference. So I think the record of doing is pretty much there. Now it's a question of whether this is something that, you know, I can then, you know, use that as a platform to go out and speak into the problems that confront America today.
The next question comes from Tom Beaumont. Tom, please state your question.
Senator, do you know much about what's going on inside the state party in Iowa? I mean, back-to-back gubernatorial losses, there's this tension between social and economic conservatives, and, you know, how do you see that tension resolving itself either in the near term or over time?
First off, we're sort of dealing with a similar thing in Pennsylvania. We've just had back-to-back gubernatorial losses in Pennsylvania. Obviously, we've lost, I lost the Senate race in Pennsylvania. We have, there are clearly divisions in the party, east-west in some cases with us, but also along ideological grounds. This is the problem. This is how you get to become a minority party, where you don't unify and you don't try to bring people together. And we went through a tough time. I mean, from 2004 on, I mean, the election in 2004 was a good election for us. But after that, I mean, 06 and 08, I mean, there was tough cycles, and a lot of it had to do with the war, and the economy, certainly in 2008. And as a result of that, when you lose elections for broader themes, which I think a lot of folks ended up losing elections because of the national climate, you then start to look at each other and start, sort of creating a circular firing squad. And I think if you look at what I was able to accomplish in Pennsylvania, which is a state that has historically been certainly in the last 30 years, a purple state, very tough for presidential candidates on the Republican side to win. You'll see someone who, yes, ran as a conservative, but was very much a unifier. I mean, I campaigned for folks across the ideological spectrum on the Republican Party in Pennsylvania, and by the way, in other states around the country, and adopted the Reagan motto, which is someone who's with you, 80% of the time is your friend, not your enemy. Now, having said that, that doesn't mean that you have to adapt your party to the 20% that they disagree with. The party stands for what it stands for. But, we accept people who are with us most of the time as opposed to not. But that doesn't mean you change the party to adapt to the people that are in it. The people who are in it have to say, well, where do I best fit if I don't fit cleanly in the Democratic Party or cleanly in the Republican Party? And that's, by the way, most Americans. And so you have to be able to form coalitions of people, and a lot of it depends on what's important at the time. And what was important in 2006 and to some degree in 2008 were issues that Republicans weren't doing very well. We weren't doing very well on the war. We weren't doing very well on spending the economy. And so a lot of folks who are, maybe with us, 60-40, were the 40% that they were with the other side happened to be more important than the 60% they supported us. And so that's how you see shifts in elections. And so what we have to do is reconnect to those people who are in the middle, who see the parties as not necessarily clearly representing them, and appeal to issues that they're concerned about at the time. And I think that's our opportunity for 2009 in New Jersey, which is clearly not a Republican state. But the issues of concern to New Jerseyans right now are issues where they have more faith in Republicans to deal with. And as a result, guys like Chris Christie and up and down the ballot have a very good chance of winning in a state where Republicans generally shouldn't win. And that's the opportunity in Iowa, and I would argue in Pennsylvania and across the country.
The last question is, do you have any plans while you're in Iowa to visit with or meet privately with local or state Republican officials?
Yeah, I hope to. I mean, I'm speaking at an event in Des Moines, the National Committee woman is the person putting that together, and so I'll certainly be talking to her, and I'll be talking to the state chairman and the national committee man and some other local leaders while I'm in town, sure.
You said Des Moines. Your speech is in Dubuque. You also have plans for...
Yeah, I think we released our schedule or itinerary, that's it. And I am doing a talk in Des Moines to a Right to Life group.
Thanks.
And I think that's out there. I'm pretty sure it's out there in the public. I'm almost positive it is. So if you don't have that, I'm sure we can... guys, if you can make sure that everybody on the call gets a copy of our itinerary, that would be helpful.